ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
We're reading this morning Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 9. Prahlad pacifies the Lord with prayers. This morning is text number 38. So say after me. Itam
Nrik
Kiryak
Rishi
Deva
Jasha
Avatarai Lokan Vibhavasa Yasi Hamsi Jagat Pratipan Dharmam Mahapurusha Pasi Yuga Anuvrittam Chanaha Kalau Yat Abhavaha Triyugaha Ata Saha Tvam Itam Nityag Rishi Deva Jaha Itam Nityag Rishi Deva Jaha Jasavatara
Itam Nityag Rishi Deva Jasavatara
Lokan Vibhavayasi Hamsi Jagat Pratipan
Lokan Vibhavayasi Hamsi Jagat Pratipan
Dharmam Mahapurushapasi Yuganuvrittam
Dharmam Mahapurushapasi Yuganuvrittam
Chana Kalau Yadabhavasri Yugo Tasatvam
Chana Kalau Yadabhavasri Yugo Tasatvam
Itam Nityirya Grishideva Jahas Jasavataraya
Itam Nityirya Grishideva Jasavataraya
Lokan Vibhavayasi Hamsi Jagat Pratipan
Lokan Vibhavayasi Hamsi Jagat Pratipan
Dharmam Mahapurushapasi Yuganuvrittam
Dharmam Mahapurushapasi Yuganuvrittam
Kalo Yadabhavastri Yugota Sattvam
Chanta Kalo Yadabhavastri Yugota Sattvam
Itam Nityirya Krishi Deva Jasavatara
Itam Nityirya Krishi Deva Jasavatara
Lokan Vibhavayasi Hamsi Jagat Pratipan
Lokan Vibhavayasi Hamsi Jagat Pratipan
Dharmam Mahapurushapasi Yuganuvrittam
Dharmam Mahapurushapasi Yuganuvrittam
Channa Kalau Yadabhavastri Yugo Tasattvam
Channa Kalau Yadabhavastri Yugo Tasattvam
Itam Nrityirya Grishi Deva Jashavatara
Itam Nrityirya Grishi Deva Jashavatara
Lokan Vibhavayasi Hamsi Jagat Pratipan
Lokan Vibhavayasi Hamsi Jagat Pratipan
Dharmam Mahapurushapasi Yuganuvrittam
Dharmam Mahapurushapasi Yuganuvrittam
Channa Kalo Yadabhavastri Yugo Tasattvam
Channa Kalo Yadabhavastri Yugo Tasattvam
Itam Nityaya Krishideva Jashavatarai
Itam Nityaya Krishideva Jashavatarai
Lokan Vibhavaya Sihamsi Jagat Pratipa
Lokan Vibhavaya Sihamsi Jagat Pratipa
Dharmam Mahapurusha Pasi Yuganu Vrittam
Dharmam Mahapurusha Pasi Yuganu Vrittam
Channakalo yat abhavastri yugota sattvam
Channakalo yat abhavastri yugota sattvam
Lady
Itam nityaya krishideva jasavatarai
Itam nityaya krishideva jasavatarai
Lokan vibhavaya sihansi jagatpatipan
Lokan vibhavaya sihansi jagatpatipan
Dharmam mahapurushapasi yuganuvittam
Dharmam mahapurushapasi yuganuvittam
Jagat Pratipam Lokan Vibhavaya Sihansi Jagat Pratipam Dharmam Mahapurusha Pasi Yuganarvatam
Dharmam Mahapurusha Pasi Yuganuvritam
Channakalu Yad Abhivasutri Yugo Yathasatam
Channakalu Yad Abhivasutri Yugo Yathasatam Itam Nityaya Krishideva Jashavatarai
Lokan Vibhavaya Sihamsi Jagat Pratipam
Dharmam Mahapurusha Pasi Yuganuvrittam
Like a human being, such as Lord Krishna and Lord Ramchandra.
Tiryak,
Like animals.
Such as the boar.
Ishi
has a great saint.
Parashurama.
Deva
as demigods.
Jasa
as an aquatic.
Such as the fish and tortoise.
Avatarai by such different incarnations
Lokan
all the different planetary systems Vibhavayasi
you protect
Hamsi
you sometimes kill
Jagat Pratipan. Persons who have simply created trouble in the world.
Dharmam.
The principles of religion.
Mahapurusha.
A great personality.
Pasi.
You protect. Yuga Anuvritam. According to the different millenniums. Janaha. Covered.
Kalo.
In the age of Kali.
Yet, since.
Abhavaha.
Have been.
And will be in the future.
Triyugaha.
Named Triyuga.
Atta.
Therefore,
Saha,
the same personality,
from you.
Translation: In this way, my Lord, you appear in various incarnations as a human being, an animal, a great saint, a demigod, a fish, or a tortoise, thus maintaining the entire creation in different planetary systems and killing the demoniac principles. According to the age of my Lord, you protect the principles of religion. In the age of Kali, however, you do not assert yourself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore you are known as Triyuga, or the Lord who appears in three yugas. Srila Prabhupada's purport. As the Lord appeared just to maintain Lord Rama from the attack of Madhu in Kaitava, he also appeared to protect the great devotee, Prahlad Maharaj. Similarly, Lord Chaitanya appeared in order to protect the fallen souls of Kali Yuga. There are four yugas or millenniums, Satya, Treta, Dwarpa, and Kali. In all the yugas but Kali Yuga, the Lord appears in various incarnations and asserts himself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But although Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who appears in Kali Yuga, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he never asserted himself as such. On the contrary, whenever Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was addressed as being as good as Krishna, he blocked his ears with his hands and denying his identity with Krishna because he was playing the part of a devotee. Lord Chaitanya knew that in Kali Yuga there would be many bogus incarnations pretending to be God, and therefore he avoided asserting himself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is accepted as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, however, in many Vedic literatures, especially in the Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.32, Krishna Varnam Tusha Krishnam Sangopangastra Parishadam Yajnai Sankirtana Prayaya Yajantihi Sumedasaha. In Kali Yuga, intelligent men worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is always accompanied by his associates such as Nityananda, Advaita, Gadadhar, and Shivas. The entire Krishna consciousness movement is based on the principle of the Sankirtan movement inaugurated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Therefore, one who tries to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the medium of the Sankirtan movement knows everything perfectly. He is Sumedas, a person with substantial intelligence. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Sarasate Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nirvishesha Shunyavan Vastachyade Sahara Om Gyanam Timuranta Sharanam Jana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmitam Denai Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha So Nrisimhadev is being prayed to here in this way by Prahlad Maharaj. He says, Uttam, in this way. Then he gives a list. Mri, Tiryam, Ishi, Deva, Jasa, the different kinds of avatars. Prabhupada makes use of the English word incarnation, which has currency in Christianity. literally, at least etymologically, it's a little misleading, because incarnation means literally to take on flesh. Carne is the Latin word for flesh, and so there's the Christian doctrine about Jesus that he took on he was a human, he had a fully human, you know, material person. So don't be misled by incarnation. But avatar, at this point, at least in my country, you can use the word avatar because it's an English word. It's moved its way into the English language dictionary as a term used when people are playing video games. Their person in the game world is their avatar. So now you can say avatar, actually. They misused it just like everything else. Or sometimes it's used in an exemplary, the avatar of arbitrage, you know, for some businessman or something, an example. But you can use the word and you explain what it means. One who comes down. This is the true meaning of avatar. One who descends. And that's what Krishna does. It is not that he takes on a material form. Why? Where do all these forms come from? Well, janmadasyataha. Everything is there in the source. Krishna is the God, is that which everything comes. And Prabhupada points out, you cannot give what you have not got. And so the idea that God was first there in the source of everything, the Brahman, Supreme Brahman, was impersonal and then became a person, is wrong. Because personality is there. And all these different varieties of species and everything, it is there. He's the seed-giving father. Krishna is full of vishesha, prabhaja, variety. That is to say, a particular, something that can be named as a particular feature of something is a vishesha. And Mayavada philosophy is near vishesha. And they say, well, if the objection to Mayavada philosophy is that you say God is a person, like you say Krishna, a person that I can name, an individual name, then you say you've limited God. Because you said this and not that. I'm an individual, I have a name that denotes me, a proper name, but that means I have a boundary. Here, my skin is the boundary. I start here, and then there's something that's not me over there. People object to the idea that God is a person. When I was giving a talk in the early days of the movement, someone says, "Oh, don't limit it by giving it a name." This is a young lady, and I said to her, her name was Karen. I said, what if somebody said, Karen is a nice girl, and I said, don't limit it by giving it a name. Is that a very nice, would you appreciate that? A name? Or the other people said, I think God is just energy. Now notice the just. Like electricity, something you could come and use, you know, and you're greater than that. So if God is just energy, that's also a limitation. If God is simply an amorphous, undifferentiated light, that's a limitation too. So God is not, the impersonal feature is there, but also personal. So here you have an idea. How great God is. How great God is. They have such, people have limited imagination, and they project some idea about God, and it's always little. The great denier of God in the Western world, Friedrich Nietzsche, gets credit for that, although he's not the only one to do it. You know, he said God is dead, and his idea of God was some kind of you know, 19th century Burgermeister, scuffy, proper, and above all, boring. Because he also said, I would believe in a God who would be able to dance. Thinking that God, of course, couldn't do that. But here's how great God is. And you can't just say, no, you can't do that. You can't appear here. Human being, okay, we understand that. But then they say, Tyria, a boar, an animal. Why, well, why not? You're going to stop it? He's having fun. So he has, and all different human forms too. Because that's how he's unlimited. You could say, oh, if Krishna's black, then he's not green. Yeah, he is. he's a rainbow coalition of colors, you know, everything there, all the colors are there. He's not limited. If he's a this and he's not that, no, so many forms of Godhead. Uncountable, like, and they come down like the waves of a waterfall or waves of the ocean. They're coming down. This is how great God is. He can do this. He has so many different forms. So he has unlimited forms. Anantarupa. Unlimited forms, and that his form is unlimited. You may think this anantarupa is itself a self-contradiction. But no, because he has unlimited forms, and he's also unlimited. Because there's Krishna, and then there's Krishna's environment, but that environment is Krishna in another form. So nothing is different from Krishna, yet Krishna is different from everything. This is how Prabhupada put this in Chincha Beda Beda Kata, last purport of Bhagavad Gita. Nothing is different from Krishna, yet Krishna is different from everything. And there's different ways of being different, too. That's also been explained. Different kinds of differences. The difference that Krishna has with himself, the difference he has with other beings in the spiritual world, the difference he has with material energy, with the spiritual energy. This is variety. And yet it's unified. There's unity and variety. Another place Prabhupada says in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's nothing but Sri Krishna, yet nothing is Sri Krishna save and except his own primordial personality. That's another way of So this Achincha Beda Beda Tattva is our way of seeing. It's a philosophy, a darshan, but it's the way we have to see the world. Nothing is different from Krishna, yet Krishna is different from everything. And that's the devotee's appreciation. And as he appears in all these different ways, some of it's for fun. God can't have fun. We can have fun, but when you go to church, it's boring. That's what I thought anyway, because when I was a small child and going to Sunday school, and they were explaining the concept of being all-powerful to me. God is all-powerful, and I thought, okay. And I thought about it a while, and then I thought, well, if he's all-powerful, he has unlimited power, then the job of creating the world, you know, which is 7 days labor in the Bible, it wouldn't be hard work for him. Neither would it be hard work for him to manage the whole thing. It would be easy. So therefore, it would be boring. Right? It would be boring. And so then I thought, then what does God do with his time? And I asked my teachers and the minister, what does God do in his own kingdom, in heaven? They didn't know, really. I never thought of that. They said, I just thought of sort of sitting in a throne, sitting there doing nothing. And then I understood what church was for, to give you a taste for boredom. Because that's where you were going. So this is here we know what he does. As Prabhupada said once, we know his name, we know his address, we know his family members, maybe a phone number. All of that, we have this information that's given. So when one makes the claim that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, did a classic definition from St. Anselm and the Christians, a being greater than which none can be conceived. You can't think of anyone greater. That's the definition of God. We can explain Krishna. Now you tell me just the idea of someone that's greater. I don't think they can do it. They can't. Here's what it means to be a being no greater than which anyone can be conceived. People have a partial realization, and of course a partial realization is true. Brahman is a partial realization, Paramatma is a partial realization, Bhagavan, they have also some idea that in Jesus Christ there's a representation of God. Prabhupada was really conversant with that. If you read the Quran, it's great. I mean, it's a really makes you pious. But they're all limited perspectives, and the tendency is to take some limited thing and then it's just like material scientists, they find one truth, like Newton, a few laws of motion, and it's true as so far as he knows, but then they make it the key to all and everything, and then what doesn't fit, what they can't understand or can't explain or can't turn into numbers, then it's not there. Just because you could say it's useful to look at the world in terms of numbers sometimes, but to say the world is only that which can be completely exhaustively explained in terms of numbers, then you have modern mechanistic science. That's just pride. So the antidote to pride is see who's really great. And here's Krishna. So here he gives the list. He sees the Sringadeva and he recognizes him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he recognizes his biography. This Bhagavatam is the biography of God. And by the way, as big as it is, it's partial. Because there are many more volumes of Bhagavatam, even in the Svargaloka. So, because God is unlimited, actually, his biography will also be more pages being added, actually. It's going on like that. So this is the appreciation that Prahlad has. Seeing the Sringadeva before him, here you've come again, and he's, according to what we know, he says, you both protect and kill. And as Krishna gives his succinct mission statement in Bhagavad Gita, Pratitanayam Sadhanam Vinasayat Satuskritam. This is his mission. He intervenes from time to time and makes a correction. And mostly to protect the devotees, the sadhus, the pious people, those who have, Prabhupada says, Jagat Pratipam, persons who have simply created trouble in the world, and then protect Dharma. To protect Dharma. According to the different millenniums. Prabhupada uses the word millennium for Yuga. Technically, millennium means 1,000 years. Millennium in Latin. And here's the verse in the Bhagavatam where it says that in Kali Yuga he is covered, obscured. In Kali Yuga he is covered. This is the place. Earlier, Prabhupada quotes where in Bhagavatam 5:11, 5:33, where Karabhajana, one of the nine Yogendras, is speaking to King Nimi. and who asked him what are the avatars in the different ages, and he describes them. And then when he mentions the Kali Yuga avatar, he gives this verse, Krishna Varnam Tusha Krishnam Sangopangasta Parshadam, which describes Mahaprabhu. So there it's mentioned in the Bhagavatam that there's an avatar for every yuga. Even though he's known as Triyuga, he appears in three yugas. There it says there's an avatar. So here, in case you are confused, it's cleared up that in the Kali Yuga you are covered. And then Prabhupada explains what it means that Mahaprabhu is covered. Same mission statement, but he comes as a devotee. Again, it's for him to increase his enjoyment. He takes on the form of a devotee. This is explained very elaborately in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that Krishna looks at Radharani, and he's thinking, you know, Radharani, she's so much in love with me, and she derives such bliss from me. So she's the person that has this feeling, the ashraya of her feelings, the shelter. And I'm the visha, I'm the object that inspires this love in her. When I look at her love, it's so amazing and so incredible that I can't really understand it from my point of view. And the other thing is, she's enjoying more bliss than me, maybe. You know, I'm the supremely blissful person, but looks to me like her bliss is even greater. And I want to understand it. I want to taste it for myself. He seems like he's limited in this way. You know, I want to taste it for myself. But I can't because... And I'm the one that inspires it. And anyway, what is it about me that inspires such bliss in Radharani? I'd like to see what I look like in her eyes. So for these reasons, and this is something eternal, I mean, Lord Chaitanya, like all the avatars, he eternally exists in the spiritual world. There is this feature of Krishna where he takes on the color and the feelings of Radharani. So he can also be, if he's going to be the supreme worshipped, he also wants to be the supreme worshipper. You can't limit him. So this is really far out, and it's far out enough to be true. So this is the unlimited Supreme Lord. So this is where his coming is predicted. And in the next verses after that, the meter changes. And there's two verses with the frame, refrain, Mahapurusha. Vande Mahapurusha Te Charanaravindam. Thank you. These are the two verses to Mahapurusha. And here the other question, what is his name? The name Mahapurusha is there. In Sridhar's Prabhupada remarks that in Sridhar Swami's commentary, he takes those verses to refer to Ramachandra. But then Jiva Goswami shows how the same verses refer to Ramachandra, and the same words understood in a different way to Lord Krishna, and then in another way to Lord Chaitanya. And then he points out Lord Chaitanya, once in a while in a few confidential situations, showed his divinity. Otherwise he didn't want to know. He didn't want to be addressed as God. He didn't want to spoil his enjoyment of tasting the nectar of devotion. I didn't want to spoil it. But a few times, he revealed himself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. At Srivas's house, one memorial occasion where he showed all the different forms of different avatars. And of course, to a few people, the Sadbuja, which showed to Mahatma Puruja the form of combined form with Ramachandra, Krishna, and Mahaprabhu. So he did reveal, but otherwise it was pretty confidential. Later on, you know, it was broadcast by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, so that we would understand who we are dealing with. And it says in this verse that people who have sufficient intelligence, medas means brains, and so sumedas, who have really good intelligence, will worship him in this way. So here, Prahlad Maharaj also understands that in Kali Yuga, you will be covered, and therefore you are known as Tri Yuga, so that you come and you give your mission statement. And so he's really appreciating what the Lord has done for him, particularly to kill the big demon who is creating trouble in the universe and protect Dharma, so that the Devas could now reassert their reign over part of the captured territory, and so that he, Prahlad himself, would be satisfied by seeing the Lord. Oh, I'll stop there. I did.
Who should be present?
Next, would you like to go?
I should do, because I'm going to have to move on.
Oh, yeah, well, so, sure.
May I suggest that you kindly open these three windows fully, because we are many people in a small room.
Om Agyata Arantasya Gyananda Vasana Chakshur Militam Yena Tasya Shurayam Vandeham Shiro Shriyatyam Vanshmarim Aishamam Shri Rupa Sakta Tam Sadvaitam Sadhutam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna,
Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Hare Rama.
Our geograph in Philadelphia is the same.
I'm going to zoom in on the last statement of this purport. Srila Prabhupada quotes this verse many times, Krishna Varanam, Tushara Krishna. And he explains the word Sumedasaha as having sufficient intelligence, as having sufficient brain substance. Such persons will worship Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by the process of Sankirtan. Is everything okay? So what does this good intelligence mean? What is the meaning of intelligence? Intelligence is one of those abstract terms which everyone more or less has an idea what it means, but if you try to define it, you realize that it's very difficult to understand what it actually means and to precisely define it. There are different kinds of intelligence that human beings have. For instance, good memory is a symptom of intelligence. The ability to think in abstract ways, to understand abstract concepts and to work with them, for instance, in mathematics and in many other fields. The ability to learn new skills to learn new languages or whatever. We also talk about practical intelligence. And it's not that someone, it's very unusual that someone's intelligent and all around intelligent. We often hear about, at least in English, and I'm sure you have them in Germany also, the absent-minded professor who's very intelligently thinking about so many things, but he can't find his spectacles, which he's pushed up above his forehead. Practical intelligence that may manifest, business intelligence. Srila Prabhupada, he once visited with many of his disciples a place called Modi Naga, which was named after a certain Modi, not the one who's in the news nowadays, who Srila Prabhupada pointed out in private conversation, he was barely literate, but he was intelligent, he had enough business intelligence to have a whole industrial complex named after him. Similarly, Henry IV, the first, is reputed to be not school, but he had business intelligence enough to start off one of the most famous companies in the world even today. So there are different kinds of intelligence, and we see even some subhuman species, they have some kinds of intelligence that humans don't have. They probably don't have even a concept of what it means to be intelligent, but they somehow out in the great ocean, the salmon finds her way back to the spawning ground. So if we were dumped in the ocean and told just to swim, apart from the fact that we don't have the ability to swim across half an ocean, to find our way just out in the ocean, we wouldn't be able to do it. We don't have that kind of intelligence. In our modern technological, scientific age, persons are considered particularly intelligent, and of course this is a very broad statement, if they can apply their thought processes to various problems and overcome them, such as political problems. We don't find much success, but people are trying to solve those political problems, philosophical problems, psychological problems, and those who become most praised as great intellectuals, highly intelligent people, are those who successfully apply their intelligence to overcoming various problems in science and technology. There may be very intelligent people who spend their whole life working on various scientific problems, and they're not blessed by Krishna, although they wouldn't take it like that, to find out what the solution is. But those who come up with some solution, they become lauded as highly intelligent. And a great example of that in recent history is one Einstein. And there are many others. I would say most of the famous intellectuals in recent history are mostly in the science fields. What do you think about that? Pretty much. Yeah, either directly in science or thinking about science. And
they're the ones that get funded anyway.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. Because you may say, well, why didn't Einstein chant Hare Krishna? And one answer to that might be, well, Srila Prabhupada hadn't come to the West by that time. But even though he famously said, and is considered to be one of his dumbest statements among the scientific orthodoxy, that he doesn't believe that God plays dice with the universe, he's not famous for being a great theist. And today, probably the most prominent theists in the world, intellectuals in the world are evangelically atheistic, if you can put those two words together. So why don't they chant Hare Krishna?
They're
big intelligence, then why don't they? Well, Srila Prabhupada, he tongue-in-cheek deals with this in the beginning of his commentary on the Namam Vishvajana Muhavas, and when he says that there are many great scientists, philosophers, intellectuals, and why don't they surrender to Krishna? And I'm paraphrasing, but he says because they're envious of Krishna, they're demons. Actually, that's the reason. They have accepted a kind of intelligence by which Matiana Krishna Paratasvato Vamito Vipati to Vyagatana Madanta Govhi Vishatanta Misram Punaf Punas Charvata Charvananam. They are determined to go to hell. They don't want to go to Krishna. Even if they come together and they're searching for whatever it may be, the dark mass of the universe, or they're searching for this or that, they're searching for unified field theory. But they take it as axiomatic that there cannot be any metaphysical cause. I've just been going through some philosophy of science course, and the consistent endeavor is to rule out anything metaphysical. As soon as anything abstract comes in, then immediately the philosopher is shot down. We cannot accept anything. Which isn't very... If we take science to be what it should be, then why not have any metaphysical aspect? But they're just doggedly anti anything that we can't understand or we can't take under our intelligence, and they're against any higher power. And the verse here that Srila Prabhupada called it, Sume Dasaha, people who are actually intelligent. Su can mean an intensifier, very. It can also mean that which is very good. The opposite is Ku, Kume Dasaha. So we find that certain people are very intelligent, and they're very intelligent in solving various problems, mostly that which other scientists have created in the present. As it's stated in Bhagavatam, that we solve problems, our solving problems in the material world is like taking a weight off one shoulder and putting it on the other. And for a few meters as we're walking along, we think, ah, that was very good. Then we find out, oh, I've got another problem. Of course, life is much more complex than that. But real intelligence begins with, as we understand from Shastra, Atato Brahma Jignasa, to inquire into Brahma. And Brahma means janmadhyasya yataha, that from which everything comes, that which everything rests, that in which everything ultimately enters again. So we may say, or the scientists may say, that they are also searching for that, but they presume, because they're determined not to be Krishna conscious, they're determined not to accept any metaphysical cause. I heard once through Damodar Maharaj say he'd attended some conference in which scientists from all over the world they were discussing about the origin of the universe, and they made a resolution at the beginning of the conference that we're not going to talk about anything God or any such thing here. Why not? As a hypothetical proposition, it seems to be a very good one, that there was someone who designed it all. But it's not allowed in science. And if you take all the observed data, it all fits into that theory. But they don't want it, because they are Adanta Gopi Vishadanta Misra. Their senses are uncontrolled. They take sense gratification to be the be-all and end-all of life. And the result is that they enter into greater and greater darkness. So that we see. Tamisram, that's generally taken to mean the hell. But practically speaking, we can see that for all the great intelligence of people, to not only in science but in social engineering, different ideas about the way human society should be set up, for generations, since time immemorial, we got it all wrong. Now we got it right. Now we understand that marriage is not required only for homosexuals. heterosexuals don't need it. Homosexuals don't need it. Can't say that, because it's socially not acceptable to say such things. That the genders are exactly the same in all respects. Well, not quite. Almost. We may not even need males. We may just keep a few as studs, just for injecting the females. So they're convinced that they got it all right, and with their psychological speculations, and now we have everyone's equal in all respects. But the actual result is that the whole of human society is entering into darker and darker and darker darkness. Condition of human society is terrible, and we just can't imagine how it's going to get worse and worse. As Srila Prabhupada said, there will come a time when people have children. They might say, well, that's good, because at least in Europe we need some more population, but then Srila Prabhupada says people have children just to eat them. Can you imagine? It seems unimaginable, but then we see rapidly, as time goes on, that the situation in the world gets worse and worse, and it's unimaginable. What was unimaginable becomes normal. So, persons who are actually intelligent take part in the Sankirtan movement. According to IQ tests, probably most of us here, with no doubt some exceptions, would score above average, but nothing super, not up towards the answer. Of course, taking IQ tests demonstrates the kind of intelligence which is required for passing intelligent. Doesn't prove your ability to actually apply your intelligence or anything whatsoever. But our devotees don't seem to be intelligent, and many people are saying that our devotees are very unintelligent. I mean, what is wrong with all your life doing this? You only live once, and why are you doing this? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was similarly criticized as being unintelligent when he went to Varanasi. He was dancing around, and the sannyasi said, what kind of a sannyasi is this? He's supposed to be studying Vedanta, and said he's just jumping around on the streets with a bunch of stupid, crazy people.
Low class.
Low class, Mahaprabhu, sentimentalists. Of course, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spoke with them, they understood that he's more intelligent than us. That is a great challenge for our devotees to tackle the intelligent people of this world. Devotees, their intelligence is good, their intelligence is pure. Due to great good fortune, we're able to partake in the Sankirtan movement, and Sankirtan, that purifies the intelligence. Bhurijan Prabhu recounted in Australia once, Srila Prabhupada was lecturing, and you know this one? He said, Srila Prabhupada said that if you retain your semen up to the age of 24, you'll become very intelligent. And looking around at all the disconsolate faces of the men around him, Srila Prabhupada said that, but if you chant Hare Krishna, you'll also become intelligent. So it requires intelligence to take to this spiritual conscious movement, but not a kind of intelligence that people think is In the normal sense, it's considered crazy. Shortly after I was admitted in the doors of this movement, I asked Mukunda Goswami, who was a something Brahmachari, something like that at the time. I asked him, how is it that so many crazy people join this movement? I've just been in the room a few days. And he said, that's a very interesting question. I asked the same question to Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada replied that, well, he had to be somewhat crazy to join this movement. What does crazy mean here? Srila Prabhupada also wrote a pamphlet, Who is Crazy?
That's the first book I ever read, actually. Who is Crazy? The thing I ever read,
because that was a standard accusation against the devotees. Nowadays, to jump around the streets of a city dressed in Indian ethnic clothing with a shaved head and a little ponytail at the back, and that might be considered almost boring compared to what some other people do. It's like you can't shock anyone nowadays.
You could always go further.
You can always go further. But since those days, there have been people with spikes of green and purple hair coming out of their head, and with razor blades sticking out of their mouth, and all such things. Which
don't
are normal.
Forget the tattoos, you know.
The tattoos.
On your face.
Yeah. So that's normal. So devotees are quite staid compared to the things. But at the time, it was considered
outrageous.
Not only crazy, but outrageous. It was a challenge to the status quo, that why aren't you like us? So devotees were often accused of being crazy, and Srila Prabhupada made a pamphlet, Who is Crazy, to show that actually devotees are sane and most intelligent. So one who takes to this Krishna conscious movement, they are intelligent because they want to go beyond the humdrum existence of this world and find out what is the essence of everything. And one who takes to Krishna consciousness, they become most intelligent. In that verse, that adanta go bihi, uncontrolled senses. This is one major point which the so-called intelligent people of the world, of course there are some exceptions, but especially in the modern age, the very idea of sense control it's not on the agenda at all. But without sense control, one is not civilized, and one's intelligence cannot develop. Real intelligence means to understand the cause of all causes, Brahma, Atata Brahma Jignasa. We should inquire into that. And knowledge of that is revealed by the Sankirtan movement. Vidyavadhu Jivadhu. Sankirtan is the life of the wife, who is knowledge. So devotees are actually very intelligent. And what we're studying here, the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's cosmogonal, I think that term is used by one of your, in relation to Bhagavad Gita, one of your transcendentalists.
Yeah, Thoreau.
Cosmogonal. It's even beyond the cosmos. No one discusses such things. Such high philosophy, deep understanding. The whole concepts are beyond even the thought pattern. People don't even think about these things, what we are discussing here among ourselves. So it is a great challenge which Srila Prabhupada said to certain of his disciples, those who are most intelligent, to convince the intelligent class of men, as Srila Prabhupada said, about Krishna consciousness. That is a great task, because they are the people who are in many ways influencing society, and we don't know. Most people are unaware of the various influences that have shaped our culture, even coming from hundreds of years. Jesus, of course, St. Paul, they've influenced the culture, the whole Christian culture, and then Aristotle and Thomas Aquinas, Nietzsche, so many. We don't realize how much we're influenced by that, but by Srila Prabhupada's mercy, we have got the answers to all the problems, even the problems that they don't know is a problem. The real problems, birth, death, old age, and disease, they don't even perceive it as a problem. They're so far behind in their thinking. So that is a great challenge. It's like a Prahlad Hiranyakashipu. The difference between Prahlad and Hiranyakashipu in power and influence is much more than David and Goliath. Prahlad took full shelter of Nrisimhadev, and Hiranyakashipu was vanquished. Our task would be more of a war of attrition. We have to distribute these books, preach the message in these books, and it seems very difficult how we can even get into discussion with such people, because they set the paradigms in such a way that the academia is such that you don't get funding unless you play the party line, whatever, within whichever discipline it may be. So this is a major part of Srila Prabhupada's preaching. We see that Srila Prabhupada himself, he founded his movement, he traveled to nurture the tender saplings of bhakti that his disciples were cultivating. But a lot of his time went in presenting these books, which he sometimes said are meant for his disciples, sometimes said they're for sincere people, sometimes said they're meant for the most intelligent class of people. And he personally liked to meet what he called the intelligent class of people to try to convince them about Krishna consciousness. And when he first came to the West, it seems, I took this other observation, that Srila Prabhupada expected that he would move among the more intellectual circles, the thoughtful people, and discuss Krishna consciousness with them. That's how he expected it to go. But as it happened, he got the hippie class, and he worked with who he could work with. And the hippies were actually mostly from a more intellectual kind of background, but not considered very respectable in human society at that time. So, Sumedha Saha, those who are very intelligent, those who perceive that which is not immediately perceivable, that's also one symptom of intelligence. Those who are blessed by Krishna with good intelligence, they can take to this Krishna conscious movement, and it's just a thought as I finish it, that that is a great task for our movement, to contact the intelligent class of people and present to them Krishna consciousness as the highest truth, the most intelligent, the best use of their intelligence, the proper use of their intelligence. Hare Krishna, I have to prepare to leave now. Thank you very much to all the devotees, as Jai Satchinanda said this morning, for a memorable festival, which is made possible by the participation of all the devotees. I have been particularly the kirtans and the quality of lectures. Some devotees have been studying Prabhupada's books and meditating on them for 40 years.
A few sparks of intelligence, maybe. Yeah. Once in a while. Yeah.
Transcendental insight. So, all of you younger devotees, you please study Srila Prabhupada's books very carefully. and pray to Lord Narasimhadev for intelligence. He also gives intelligence. Hridaye samvit, in his heart is samvit. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you for coming.
Glad to see you.
Hare Krishna.
Hope we meet again next year. In time, same place.
Yep, next year and next year and how many more? Not that many, probably.
Anyway, we're eternal associates. Right?
Yeah. Here or there. Here or there. Oh, that wasn't all. I didn't get all. Not very intelligent. Could I get this after the lecture?
Yeah. Other people have recorded it too.
I also have to leave right after class.
Oh yeah. How am I gonna come?
And I'm on my way to Russia. Then Far East Russia, Mongolia, and then Ukraine. So I would like to make my presentation brief because of the time limit, and I would like to share a few points. Let me offer first my humble and respectful obeisances to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Krishna Hare Shri Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nityananda Namaste Saraswati Devi Namaste Nirvishesha Shri Bhavani Ashtare Krishna Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Krishna Bhakti Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So I would like to share a few notes with you. Perhaps we can read quickly the verse again. In this way, my Lord, you appear in various incarnations as a human being, an animal, a great saint, a demigod, a fish, or a tortoise, thus maintaining the entire creation in different planetary systems and killing the demoniac principles. According to the age of my Lord, you protect the principles of religion. In the age of Kali, however, you do not assert yourself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And therefore, you are known as Triyuga, or the Lord who appears in three yugas. As Dr. Nikash Maharaj also mentioned, that Prahlad Maharaj and Lord Narasimhadev, it is on one hand related to a particular pastime of the Lord, but in a different way it also refers to a principle. It is an eternal principle. In one class Srila Prabhupada mentioned that the conflict between the theists and the atheists has an eternal principle, he explained. It is always there. So that's also another way to look at it. And as Srila Prabhupada, as the verse today also mentions, the demonic principles, of killing the demonic principles. Then related to the point of the Lord, whenever he displays a particular pastime, lila, he with one pastime or even just one activity, he fulfills so many different purposes. another class Srila Prabhupada mentioned, I was just recently listening to it. He said that's the difference between the ordinary living entity and the Supreme Lord. Whenever he does something, then he fulfills so many different purposes. Just like he was taking care of Hiranyakashipu, he was eternized the entire universe. He fulfilled that purpose. He stopped him, killed him, gave him liberation. Then he protected his dear devotee, Palad Maharaj. And as Prabhupada Prabhu also mentioned, related to the heavenly planets, the order up there has been reinstalled. And the Lord also satisfied his own desire to have a good fight. I just read in one purport, Srila Prabhupada explains, sorry, this was one letter to Krishna Das. In this letter to Krishna Das, Srila Prabhupada explained that we don't find the fighting spirit in the Vishnu expansions of the Lord. He mentioned that. So it looks like that fighting spirit we find in Lord Krishna. He has that particular desire to have a good fight. And Lord Simhadev, he is being mentioned technically as the Shat Aishwarya Purna avatar. He belongs to the Paravasta category of incarnations of the Lord, which means all the six opulences of the Lord are present in Lord Simhadev. He's a full-fledged personality of Godhead. Only three are mentioned. Of course, Lord Krishna himself, and Lord Ramachandra, and Lord Nrisimhadev. They belong to this category. And all the six opulences are fully manifested. In one morning walk, one disciple asked the Prabhupada that could Lord Ramachandra do what Krishna has done? Because after all, it's the same person, personality of Godhead. But could Prabhupada answer? Yes, of course. But according to the time, place, circumstances, he revealed a certain pastime leader, certain qualities. But he has that tattva that he could do whatever Krishna was doing. And still, it is mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam, after listing all the different various incarnations of the Lord, expansions of the Lord, that Lord Krishna, he is the Swayam Bhagavan, he is the cause of all incarnations, all avatars, all expansions, he is the cause of all causes. This is Lord Krishna. When we study Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and specifically also Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu Nectar of Devotion, we find that the knowledge contained in these literatures is so vast and so detailed and so deep at the same time that this Krishna consciousness, this is our offer to the world. Srila Prabhupada very often referred to Krishna consciousness as a science. There's such a deep and different knowledge contained in these literatures. It is a science. This is our offer, this is our challenge. Is there any other religion in the world who has such a detailed knowledge that the living entity can have five principal relationships with God, not just fear Him, but actually love Him, even wrestle with Him, whatever you like to do? These relationships are there. Where's that knowledge? That you can climb on the shoulders of God. Of course, Lord Vishnu, you cannot do that. of Krishna. Such detailed knowledge. It is a science. There's one nice verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Krishna tattva, bhakti tattva, prem tattva sar, bhava tattva, rasa tattva, lila tattva are. Krishna consciousness means to understand the truth of Krishna, the truth of devotional service, the truth of love of Godhead, the truth of emotional ecstasy, the truth of transcendental mellows, and the truth of the pastimes of the Lord.
Where is this, please?
What's your number?
This is in the Matya Lila, 25, 265. So this one verse, when we know these 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 principles, 5 tattvas of the Lord, then we have a complete, a wholesome understanding of the Supreme Personality of God. Oh God. Then I would like to talk a little bit about, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada explained or writes, the entire Krishna consciousness movement is based on the principles of the Sankirtan movement. One who tries to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the medium of the Sankirtan movement knows everything perfectly. But before I talk on this point, I just remember, I really wanted to share this with you. Another day I listened to a class of Srila Prabhupada, and he, in a very amusing way, mentioned that after the Lord killed Hiranyakashipu, he approached Lord Rama and told him, they don't give such a boon again. Because it really put me into trouble. Figure out all the details. Of course, for Krishna, no problem. But anyway, Prabhupada commented, like he mentioned that, don't give such boons again. So I thought this was an interesting point. There's one nice verse in the Skanda Purana, Mahabhagavata Nityam Kalau Sankirtya Keshavam, which describes the symptoms of a Mahabhagavata. And specifically in this verse it is mentioned that such an elevated devotee of the Lord, he is always engaged in chanting the holy names of the Lord and spreading it. This is a symptom, particular symptom of a Mahabhagavata, the greatest transcendentalist devotee of the Lord in this age of Kali. Kalo mentioned in this verse. So this verse perfectly describes Srila Prabhupada. He was that Mahabhagavata described in this particular verse from the Skanda Purana. And we have direct experience being with Srila Prabhupada. He was always chanting the holy name. All the time he had his hand in the beat bag, wherever he was, airport, any place, always chanting. I remember in Sweden, we had the great fortune to be in Srila Prabhupada's room one evening, and Srila Prabhupada was chanting the Maha Mantra, playing harmonium, for a little more than 1 hour. It was such a wonderful experience. Although Srila Prabhupada was so engaged, so busy in managing our society all over the world, translating, and we know how busy Srila Prabhupada was, but still he always found some time to sit down and just chant Hare Krishna. It's the very first thing he did when he came to America. He could have done so many other things. He just sat down, Tompkins Square Park, chanted Hare Krishna. And that's the symptom of the Mahabhagavata, the greatest. It's so important to always deepen our understanding of Srila Prabhupada's position as the founder acharya of ISKCON. What is his relationship to this movement? What is his relationship to the members of ISKCON? There's an ongoing need to deepen our understanding. And Ravindra Swarup Prabhu wrote one a booklet, Srila Prabhupada's position, and it has been published now, and which explains in such a wonderful way, an academic and yet easy to understand way. I mean, not that easy, but we have to read it a couple of times. But I read it, and it deepened my own understanding of Srila Prabhupada so much. And I really, if you haven't done so, get a copy of this book and study it. It will be translated in many different languages, in German, Russian, English. I think we, how many copies we printed? 50,000, I think.
Yeah.
50,000 copies.
Huh? You can also download it.
Yeah.
Can also be downloaded. That's another thing. So I highly not recommend. I mean, whatever authority you know we have, you have to take it. You have to take this book, study it very, very carefully, and it will increase our understanding of Srila Prabhupada's position, our appreciation for Srila Prabhupada, our respect for Srila Prabhupada, and our love for Prabhupada. It's such an important book. So please get a copy and study it. So, of course, we could continue, but time is limited. And I have to do another short thing, give an initiation to one bhakti. It will take only 3 minutes. I just have to give the name. And it has been arranged like this. I hope you will not be disturbed by it. Otherwise, there's no chance of it, you know, be gone for 1 year. So that's her only chance. Is Bhakti Shama here?
Interesting addition to a Bhagavatam class. Huh? What else can we do?
So she's a very, give your blessings to her. She's a very nice bhakti and very educated. She's originally from Bulgaria, and she only lives for a few years in Germany, and she already speaks better German than I do. Sometimes correcting even your grammar mistakes of the German devotees' letters. So I have to ask you quickly the four rules and regulations.
Why don't you let it go by?
Come.
What are the four rules and regulations?
Make some space.
Let us do it quick because we have to continue. Hold on.
The four rules and regulations are to further not eat any meat, fish, and eggs.
Yeah, all these nasty things you don't eat.
Also, to do no gambling, no illicit sex, and to take no.
Okay. And how many rounds every day minimum?
At least 16 rounds.
16 rounds. Okay. So I leave your name Shyama because it has been given by her parents, the name, their devotees also. We have to respect that. And your new name will be Shyama Priya Devidasi. His Holiness Sachchidananda Maharaj to continue with the lecture program. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you very much. See you next year again.
Again and again.
Yes, yes. These festivals are so wonderful, isn't it? You should have every year. Why the plan is in the future to have a one-year festival? A one-year festival. It would be really fantastic. It's so busy, so many. 1 year. In our life, a one-year festival.
Another year. That'll be the end.
Then you can relax 1 year afterwards.
Forever, I think. Forever, Maharaj.
Eternal peace after that. My God.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Maharaj, good horizon.
Oh, there was one German shloka I just heard from Peter Prabhu. Wo man singt, lasst euch nieder. Böse Menschen haben keine Lieder.
Translation.
Translation. It doesn't work in English.
We have to learn German.
Something like, what is it?
Where
people are singing together, chanting, singing together, there you should settle. Because böse Menschen,
evil
people, they don't have any songs.
Thank you, Maharaj. Thank you for your kirtan and your lecture.
Hello.
Hare Krishna. Well, everyone goes. I will be extremely brief because I know that we come to the end. Please repeat. Om Viram Mahavishnum. Kalantam Sarvato Mukham. Shingham Vijanam Bhatram. Mrityum Namam Yaham. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya
Krishna Krishaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Vinyamine Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Prasadine Nirvishesha Shunyavani Prasadhyaya Shatavi Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasati Gaurava Pravinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
I will just very briefly talk about the Lord's love for his devotees in such a way that maybe those of us who leave this place have a takeaway, they call it, something they can take with them as something to think about and work upon. Sridhar Swami, the famous commentator of the Bhagavatam, has composed a very nice verse about Lord Nrsimhadev, in which he summarizes the speciality of this avatar. He says, I bow down before Lord Nrsimha, whose wonderful form is filled with transcendental bliss, who is partial to his devotees, and who rips apart anyone who becomes the attacker of his devotee. Now, please repeat after me. I bow down before Lord Nrsimhadev, whose wonderful form is filled with transcendental bliss, who is partial to his devotees, and who rips apart anyone who becomes the attacker of his devotee. This shows you a little bit the Lord's love for his devotee Prahlad Maharaj, but his love in general for all the devotees. Jiva Goswami, he explains in this connection, if some person hates the devotees, the Lord at once becomes partial to his devotees. This is not a if some person hates the devotees, the Lord at once becomes partial to them. He becomes attentive to those who have these ill feelings. This is not a fault on the Lord's part. No, the Lord loves his devotees. He protects them and with his Kladini potency brings them great bliss. This is Krishna's ongoing activity, or the Lord's ongoing activity. He protects his devotees and gives bliss in their heart. There's a very nice part in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam where Sudama, the Brahmana, visits the Lord. Now on his way, he remembers how he met the Lord when he was very young, when they went to school together as students of Sandipani Muni. And as he walks, he remembers how Krishna now has become a big prince and lives in 16,108 palaces, but he is so poor, he is only in a straw hut. He thinks, will Krishna recognize and remind me? I have a friend, his name is Knut Fleckenstein. We used to do things together when we were children and drive our teachers crazy. And now Knut Fleckenstein is a prestigious member of the European Parliament. And I thought most probably Knut Fleckenstein will not remember Thorsten Pettersson. This is how I was known when I was a child, because now he is so important and I may not be known any longer. I ran away from school and Knut Fleckenstein stayed and made a big career, and I just dropped out more or less. So Sudama must have felt, my friend Krishna is now so famous, he's now so well known, so he has killed biggest demons like Kamsa. He's the whole world talks about him, and I'm a little poor skinny Brahmana who doesn't eat enough, therefore my veins are protruding, I look terrible. So he was feeling like this. But when he went to Dwaraka, he saw in the first palace which he approached to find Krishna, Krishna alone in the gateway waiting for him. And he was really moved. Krishna had known that he would come. And although he owned 16,108 palaces, and Sudama must have been bewildered, to which palace do I actually go? I mean, if you have an address with 16,000 Address is a very difficult word, don't mind you. So he went, and in the first palace, there was a lone figure in the gate. There was Lord Krishna waiting for him, saying, "Oh, you have come." We all know that Sudama had brought a little gift. It was some broken rice which was baked and which had become sweat rice by now because he carried it under his armpit all the way. So he did not wish to give this rice to Lord Krishna, but Krishna accepted it. He took it with his own lotus hand and said, "I know you have brought something for me. Please let me taste it." Now, Vishwanath Chakravarti tells us what goes on in the mind of the Lord who loves his devotees. It's something where you might have to listen very carefully to catch the subtleties. So I'm announcing this so that you will derive a lot of benefit by listening attentive. Krishna said, "Something may or may not be tasty and pleasing in its own right. However, if my devotee offers it to me in love, with the expectation that I will enjoy it, I eat it with great pleasure without thinking twice about it." The verb ashnami, I eat, implies that Krishna eats even a flower. Maybe to help you understand this. When you get a meal and there's a flower, and imagine you love the person who brought the meal so much that you leave no remnant and you even eat the flower, it shows you are really loving the person. So, the verb ashnami, I eat, implies that Krishna eats even a flower, which though acceptable, is not really edible. You cannot eat it. Because he is bewildered as he is by the ecstatic love he feels for his devotee. You know, when, do you know this verse? Patram pushpam palanto yam. Would you like to quote it? Patram pushpam palanto yam. Yo me bhakta prayasyati. It means Krishna is explaining in the Gita that someone who offers to me, please help me, what? A flower, water, a leaf, and a fruit. I accept this if it is done with love. It means, says Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, that the Lord eats even the flower which is on the plate because he loves his devotees. He is a little bewildered by that love. So the reason why I think it is very good to think about this today is because you need to understand what is Lord Nrisimhadev's reason for appearing. It is the reason, it's a loving reason. He loves his devotee and he's partial against those who are envious of his devotees. He loves them to an extent that he even accepts an imperfect offering like the sweat rice of Sudama. This gives us great hope, my dear devotees. We may be imperfect, we may have faults, we may be sometimes discouraged, but there should be no reason. We should turn with great attention to the Lord, who is literally very sweet. Look at Lord Nashiadev today, to even convince everyone that he is a sweet Lord. He has covered himself with sandesh. Do you know that this is sandesh? It's not just an artistic decoration, it's pure sandesh. You can eat it. And he looks very sweet and joyful, you know, with his smiling mouth and there's a hair on his under his nose, you know, mustache. He really looks like, understand, I'm here, I'm a joyful Lord, I'm a very much loving the devotees. So please take this little message with you in your Krishna conscious efforts, without feeling discouraged, become enthusiastic to offer something to the Lord. Become enthusiastic to also turn to the Lord in times when you face obstacles. Don't turn to the Lord just in good times. Turn to Him in bad times as well. I'm serious, because normally you think everyone turns to the Lord when things are tough, but I've seen devotees turning to the Lord when things are tough, and turning not to the Lord, but becoming depressed and hopeless, or taking counsel from material opinions, and taking shelter in arrangements with money and so on and so forth. No, the Lord waits for you, and to turn to Him, and that is the good feeling which the devotee has for the Lord. Yeah, I don't want to, I have full, you know, these notes, if I would tell them to you, you would sleep on the floor. It's so much knowledge for Paramatma Sandava, but this will come at another time. This is the end of the festival. Please, before you leave, don't forget to go before the Lord. If you have mobile phones, like you have in modern times, this is a good time to make a photo and share it with your many, many devotee friends. And yes, I want to repeat what Ravindra Swarup Prabhu, Bhakti Kash Maharaj, and our Mongolian preacher Swami, my Baba Maharaj, has said: let us come again and again for such festivals. It is such a strong, strong doses for Krishna consciousness inspiration. There is really, in Krishna consciousness, these festivals are energizing us for a long time. We are poor beggars individually, but if we come to a place that the devotees assemble and sing and dance and talk about Krishna, we become rich in bhakti. We become enriched in this wonderful gift of Srila Prabhupada, this bhakti. You just need to know where to find bhakti. She's there. Bhakti Devi is there where devotees talk about the Lord and sing and do such wonderful festivals. So I want to personally thank you also very much for allowing me to come and sing with you and dance with you and share with you the very nice kindness. It helps me very much in my Krishna consciousness. Thank you very much. Come good home, and Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Shri Prahlad Nrisingha Dev ki jai, Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Hare Krishna.